Hello world! Welcome to the Personal Computer Show, the original personal computer radio show. I'm Hank Key in the studio of PRN.FM in Midtown Manhattan. And joining me this afternoon is Joe King. For those who do not have internet access or have limited data plan, you can listen over the phone by dialing 712-775-6850. For more information, you can go to our website, pcradioshow.org, or you can go to PRN.FM.
And I want you to remember, so that you don't get hurt by Hank's information, which he just gave you, if you have an unlimited local and long-distance system on your telephone, the 712-775-6850 is a fine way to listen. If, on the other hand, you have to pay for your minutes, do not, I repeat, do not use that. Go on your computer to PRN-FM. And you can also find us on TuneIn and on iPhone. And you can, I understand you can find us on Stitcher, but I haven't been there myself, so I don't guarantee it. iTunes is the way I normally go in. And I want to tell you something. Hank didn't mention it, but we are taking telephone calls live. During the show is on from 6 to 7 here on PRN, and you can call the following number toll-free. That's 888-874-4888. I'll give you that again. Get your pencil out. It's 888-874-4888. If you want to join us on the air, ask a question, give us an opinion, or just to talk with a couple of old friends who used to be on the radio with you.
Thank you, Joe. And again, let me just repeat that number. We are taking phone calls right at the top, and we are going to comment about the news this past week. If you want to talk to us, we're on 888-874-4888. By the way, Joe, there was a big announcement, a technological announcement. Well, it was at 1 o'clock Eastern Time. You want to tell me what that was about?
Well, that was about the highly rumored and quickly, lately expected iPhone 7 and 7 Plus. I know I, for one, have really been waiting. I've understood that there were going to be some major technological announcements as a result of that. Hank, I'm a little bit puzzled because it seems to me the biggest part of the announcement was about the color.
Well, you know, you have to understand that Apple is noted for PR and glitz, and it's a religion.
Well, it is. But there were a couple of other things about the announcement that really hooked me. There's the biggest change, I think, is that you will have dual cameras in the iPhone 7, and you'll have better storage, as high as 256 gigs. Of course, that to me is not as good as an SD card, a micro SD card, which would give you a variation of memory. But here you can buy an iPhone, I think it's 32, 128, and 256.
You know, I got to tell you, Joe, about the this dual lens. I was watching cable TV this morning, and one of the financial analysts says, "Wow, this will revolutionize digital photography, a dual lens." Well, and I'm saying to you know, has he ever heard of a zoom lens?
Well, that's because Hank is saying that one of the lenses is a wide angle, and the other is a telephoto, and the telephoto, in combination with the wide angle, gives you a zoom lens, really.
Well, and then he said that the other major change he was ever excited about it is the gold color. I feel like saying, has he ever realized that in the aftermarket people were buying skins to put on their iPhone to begin with?
Well, it's not just a gold color, huh?
Well, okay, they have gold, they have rose gold, they have black, they have silver. My God, has anyone talked about the quality of the phone?
I haven't heard anybody doing that, but the iOS 10 upgrade is an important thing. The different size screen size. It's more important than any of that is water resistance. The SIM card area is waterproof, and making it even more water resistant than other models, they did something really amazing.
Yeah, by the way, you know, we are taking phone calls. If anyone wants to comment about the Apple announcement, it's 888-874-4888. Now, while we're doing this, Joe, I know that there was a major announcement about from Samsung, because this really we have to talk about, because it's a record of 2.5 million units.
Okay, let's not put that out of proportion. There have been 35 cases, 35 out of the, how many million?
2.5 million.
I don't know what the percentage is, but it's got a lot of zeros after the period.
A lot of zeros before, yeah, after the period, but before you even hit a number.
Nevertheless, it's a very serious thing. 35 phones, Samsung Note 7.
The battery caused a burn.
The battery either blew up or set a fire. That's serious. I'm not minimizing it. But when I first heard the news, I heard that all 2.5 million of them blew up. That's not true. And also, Samsung, while they've recalled the entire output, and they'll replace those eventually, they did not do what the consumer product safety recommendation would be, and that's to run it through the government to make sure that everybody does get a new phone.
Well, they had announced that they are replacing the phones with new ones. They're not fixing it. They're going to actually replace it. And I know that Verizon Wireless, T-Mobile, Sprint, and AT&T have already announced that they will no longer sell the phone. Target will no longer sell the phone. And what Consumers Union was talking about was there are selective I have to verify, so I won't name some of the big outlet stores still selling it, because they're selling it out of inventory. They should not be doing it. In other words, until you know that there is a the replacement is in effect and they're following through on it, do not buy it, because you're going to end up sending it back and you don't want to go through this delivery back and forth.
Well, if you're lucky, you'll end up sending it back. If you're unlucky, your house will burn down.
No. You know what? I think Samsung is doing the right thing. The only thing is that, they're a major manufacturer, global, and they want to make sure that they've learned what Volkswagen did and a couple of the others, that, you know, this, the PR is very important.
I'll tell you, Hank. You're absolutely right. And the reason they're having lousy PR for me is because they didn't follow the rules. And sometimes these manufacturers get so big that they're too big to fail. The rules say that you report the problem to the consumer safety panel, that you tell the consumer safety panel how you're handling the recall, and they supervise it so that no retailer out there, no gray market person, no black market person sells the wrong phone.
We are taking phone calls at 888-874-4888. You know, Joe, we're talking about recalls. You know there's a problem with the iPhone 6.
Yes and no.
Well, according to Apple, there's no problem, but go ahead, Joe.
What do you do if you have an iPhone 6S and you look at it and suddenly there's a gray band along the top of it?
That's not Apple's problem, is it?
Apple says that doesn't happen.
But it was caused by a defective chip.
It wasn't Apple's chip.
Right. So they're saying it's not their problem because...
No, they're saying it's not reproducible because they've looked at any number of these phones offline and it's not happening.
You believe all that?
Well, the problem is that a whole bunch of people can see it on their own phone, and they're really not happy when they're told over the phone.
It's not a whole lot of people, but what's happening is that on the iPhone 6S, there is a gray band at the top of the screen, and originally they thought it was a screen problem, and Apple said, no, it's not a screen problem, and it was traced to a faulty chip from the supplier on a small sampling, and you know those are tough to find. Now, can you imagine doing a recall on the iPhone 6, 6S and to find out that you're only replacing a few phones, and maybe Apple saying it's not worth the effort?
So how about this as a compromise? When your phone, your Apple 6, gets a gray band across the top of it. You call up Apple and say, hey, my phone has a gray band across the top of it. And Apple says, oh, we're sorry. And they send them a package, and they return it, and they get a whole new one.
Hey,
that's
listen,
what it should be.
Let me interrupt, okay? We have a caller from Phyllis, and I think she has a question. Phyllis, how are you?
I'm okay, thank you. I just want to know if you're talking about computers or just telephones.
Well, we're talking about computing, and computing spans laptops, desktops, smartphones, tablets, anything that's computing.
Well, let me say this.
Well, I'm happy to find you. I've heard your other radio show, and I'm a new user, and I have a Windows 7 laptop. I have downloaded Windows 10, but I never installed it. I want to make a backup, like you said, and or an image file and a restore of Windows 10, but I'm not sure how to do it. I've had read that there are hidden files that do not get copied. What are these, and do I need them? Please help me.
Okay. Tell you what, we're getting feedback because you have the you have that on. Let me add, if you can... I think I got the gist of your question, okay? If you have not upgraded from Windows 7 to Windows 10 or Windows 8 or 8.1 to Windows 10 yet, you can still upgrade it if you happen to have a copy of Windows 10 build 1511. It's got to be build 511. I know that the new one that is called the anniversary one is called build 1608. Now, the reason why they call it build 1608 is because it was released in the year 2016 in April 1, so they call it the eighth month. But what you need is 1511, which was released in November of 2015.
Hank, you just confused everybody because it's August, not April.
Oh, I said April? I meant August, okay. But I think people knew that, all right? And so what it is that... you can still upgrade if you happen to have the distribution. Now, if you're trying to do an online upgrade, it's not possible. So hopefully, and I think you happen to have a copy of the distribution that was made available free from Microsoft. Now, you could download Windows 10 with the latest build, but you need a an access a license to activate that. Now, having said that, what you should do is... you can run it so long as you don't have to give any new code at all. You can upgrade it. And once you upgrade it, you have to remember one thing, that once you now have that Windows 10, you have to make sure you do a system image backup almost immediately, because if you don't do it, and what happens is that they wipe out in I think, 10 business days after the upgrade, they wipe out your older version of Windows under Windows.old. Now, you could save Windows.old in its entirety, or do an image backup, and then if Windows 10 crap out on you for any reason, you still have a legitimate copy of Windows 10. And I think that's what she was referring to.
Okay, Phyllis, thank you very much for that call. Folks, I want to remind you that you can call into the show 888-874-4888. And Hank can answer most questions, with the exception of the one that I asked him, how do you fix the car? But he said that's the wrong show.
Did you put gas in?
Oh, that's what that pipe. I'll tell you, this, very, very seriously, yesterday I pulled up to a gas station with a car I had just rented, and the gas cap, the gas tank, was on the right side.
Oh, you drove in the wrong way.
the car I rented last week, the gas tank was on the left side.
Yeah, but you rented a different car.
Well, for heaven's sakes, can't they standardize anything?
You know, Joe, that's one of the problems of being a senior, right?
I'm not a senior. I'm an old guy.
Well, Joe, you know, we were talking about the problem with Samsung on the battery. And, you know, lithium-ion battery-like technology has been around since the early 1970s, and there's really been no new technological changes. Now, I realize that many companies, MIT labs and so on, they're coming with new ideas, but either the cost is so costly, or the process takes so long, it's amazing that it's almost, what, almost 40 years and we don't have new battery technology. Now, the reason why the problem with lithium-ion batteries and why when you're flying on an airplane you're so concerned about it is that if you use a wrong charger unit, you can put a tremendous amount of heat on the lithium-ion battery, and that can cause it to burn out. That's one of the problems.
Or blow out.
Yeah. Have you noticed that when you take your tablet charger and you try to charge up your phone, and sometimes you get this message, you got the wrong charger? Have you ever seen that message?
I certainly have.
Well, a lot of people say, oh, I can charge up faster. Yes, you will charge up faster, but you run the risk of burning that battery out and causing a fire. Did you know that?
Now, I have a Samsung Note 4 here in my hand, and it has the high-speed charging built in as a feature.
Okay, because it monitors it, and then it knows when to turn it off when it hits a certain heat level.
Now, it came with a charger, and it came with a nice white cable for the charger, which I'd leave at home and generally have something in my bag. This afternoon, I was at somebody's office, and I realized my phone was very low, so I took out whatever charger I had, which was a high-speed charger, but it wasn't the Samsung version. And it was it had a cable, but it wasn't the Samsung version. And I was charging it, and the Samsung reported that it was a high-speed charge, but it got so hot, the phone itself, that I had to put it down. Supposedly, those two charges were the same. It's just different brand names.
Same cable?
Different cable.
Ah, you find that some of the cables are not compliant. And you got to remember, you're charging through an AC adapter, or you're charging through the USB port on a computer. And if you do that, you'll find that the leads... You know, have you ever noticed that the USB cord on the charger, some are thick and some are very thin? Guess what?
Yes, I have,
They're not because I think you need three wires to do it. Some use two wires, some has less. And, you know, you got to be very careful. So what we're saying is that with the lithium ion, especially with telephones with the different levels of the charger itself, you know what? Use the charger that came with the unit, or if you need a replacement charger, make sure that the milliamps that it needs matches up. Don't use one that goes, what, 2.1, 2.5. That's for a tablet. With a phone, it's around 0.9 to 1. So you have to make doubly sure that you have the right charger. You know, Joe, there was a major report that came out this past week from the Department of Labor on the labor market, and I found it very interesting. And I know that I have as a general rule, I don't talk politics, but this one really got me going. And that's the fact that in the last 8 years, in fact, with the exception of one sector, the job market has either been the same or slightly up. In other words, very little growth, but not really any downward numbers, except for one sector. That's the tech sector, and it's down in terms of the number of available jobs by 6.5%. That's a lot, because if anything, in a growing population, you like to have it grow at the same rate of population, so everyone that is getting to the job market, they have a job. But with the tech sector, down 6.5%, with a growing population, that means you really have a lot of people. And yet, as reported, okay, the reason why a lot of tech companies are having problems, they don't have enough tech people. And then you say, wait a minute, they on the one hand they're crying they don't have enough tech people. On the other hand, the tech market is down 6.5% in the last 8 years. And, of course, we know what the problem is, right, Joe?
No, we don't.
Because you don't? I do.
No, that's why I say we don't. I do, but you don't.
Okay, let me hear your take on it.
And I do, but half the people in Washington don't. I do, but a large number of people on the West Coast don't. And I'll tell you what the problem is. Technology changes. Now, we don't like that, because if technology changes, then you have to learn something new every day, every week, every month. And people don't like to do that. They like to do it the old-fashioned. You don't believe me? just take a look at Congress. They don't like to learn anything new.
Now, wait a minute. I would challenge that, okay?
You can challenge it all you want. I have the figures that prove it, that there is a large number of technical jobs available, but a very great shortage of people with the skills to
okay,
do them.
Okay, let me challenge that, all right? As reported in the New York Times, the gray old lady you call it?
No, I don't call her the gray old lady.
You call the gray lady
the
or
the gray lady?
Okay,
but that's only for people who read the Times.
Well, it was in the Sunday Times, and what they did was they reported on an Apple employee who was largely responsible with working with Steve Jobs in converting the Mac from using the power chip to the Intel chip.
Wait a minute. You know what we were just talking about,
yes,
right?
Let me finish.
What were we talking about?
Okay. You're talking about it's a change in technology.
We were talking about a change in technology, and you're talking now about a very serious problem, and I don't want you to minimize it. I want to get to that problem.
No, let me get to it, okay?
No, I'm not going to let you finish it.
Let me finish then.
No, I don't want to let you finish.
Joe, what it is that after working for Apple for 21 years, okay, and he had a major role in changing the architecture of the Mac, he retired, and after a very short time, at the age of 54, he got tired. He wanted to go back to work. So he figured he'd take a reduced role. So he applied for a job in the Apple store.
As what?
And
At what job?
To work in the Apple Tech Bar.
No, he wanted the Genius Bar. He felt
Genius
he qualified
bar, right,
for
okay.
that.
And guess what? They didn't hire him.
And why didn't they? Because he didn't know the technology? No, that had nothing to do with it.
Go ahead. What is the reason at age 54?
He was an old man.
Wait a minute. What does ageism have to do with technology then?
I'm about to tell you.
Okay.
A lot of people don't want to know about prejudice. A lot of people don't want to know about hate. A lot of people don't want to know about stupidity. He was actually twice as old as the next oldest person in the tech bar. He was three times as old as the youngest person at the tech bar. And the person who was doing the hiring took one look at them and said, the chemistry is wrong. Didn't question the man's knowledge, his technology, his background, or his experience. Of course, if he had noticed that he was a high-paid executive at Apple, it might have made him think twice
but
about
Joe,
it.
But, Joe, let me ask you this, okay?
That has nothing to do with what I was talking about on the H-1B.
Well, I didn't go to H-1B yet, okay? But from corporations, I know of almost no corporations that says age is a factor. None of them, okay?
That is absolutely correct.
And none of them have it in writing implicitly or explicitly that you got to hire someone young. But the people doing the hiring, there has to be a cultural change in the people doing the hiring to understand that, you know, on the one hand, we say there's a shortage of tech people. On the other hand, we have a lot of people who are unemployed starting in their 50s and up.
Well, there's two things, and you can't combine them. There's one is the knowledge, the specific knowledge of the specific technology. I'm not talking about that. That's a perfectly legitimate reason not to hire somebody if they don't know how to do the job. What I'm talking about is somebody who knows how to do the job, but he's or she is too old to fit into the chemistry of the company. That is baloney. That's pure baloney. And the way out of it, and the reason there are no lawsuits, and this reason there's no anything, any protection for the older person, is because they get out of it by saying, we don't have any corporate policy on this.
By the way, if anyone wants to comment about this, because we're going to continue our talk on this, but we'd be happy to entertain anyone who has a strong opinion on this, it's 888-874-4888. And I have to tell you, on the one hand, we hear people saying we need more people in STEM. More people in science, technology, engineering, and math. We laid off all those engineers from the space program. And, you know, it was reported that in the last graduating class overall from engineering school, only 51% who graduated an engineering degree found work in engineering.
And the problem is largely that there's a cutback in all of that. NASA, who used to hire lots and lots and lots of people, has busy laying off lots and lots and lots of people. A company that is doing its engineering in Bangladesh doesn't need to hire anybody in San Francisco.
By the way, we have a caller. He may have a question on it. Yes, whom are we speaking to?
This is Jay from Manhattan.
Yes, Jay.
Listen, this is my first time calling on your new show. I'd like to congratulate you on your new digs. I hope you're feeling comfortable. And my question is just a little bit in the area of what you were just talking about, science and engineering. I notice that I'm a sort of a quasi Linux user for the past 3 years, and I noticed there are a lot of science and engineering applications in Linux, many more that seem to be available in under Windows. And of course, I don't know about the Apple operating system, but perhaps if you commented a little more or took more questions about Linux, maybe you could engage a larger, demographic with that. What's your impression?
Well, my impression is this. There are, of course, people interested in and expert in and beginners in Linux and Unix. But when you talk about widening the demographic, I think that if you took all of the Linux people who are interested, I think they could fit on the head of a pin.
Well, I think with the latest survey that was done, about 90.1% or 2% of the people using Windows, about 7.1% or 2% are using the OS X system, and like 1.3% are using Linux. And there's a big problem with Linux. Okay, actually, there's two problems. One is there are so many different versions of Linux that without standardization, the navigation and everything attendant with it, people who write programs tend not to support the platform itself. I'll give you a good example, okay? Typically, the one thing that most of us share is filling out our income tax returns once a year. You can find tax programs for the Mac running OS X. You can find tax programs running on the Windows. But when it comes to Linux, there really isn't any. Now, the Chromebook that is really Android or a Linux-related base, they say, okay, you can do your taxes online, but it's a very simple one, which is 1040EZ, and that's it. If you have anything more complicated than that, you really have to find a different platform, and that's one of the main reasons why. And then, of course, with Linus Torvalds, with his commentary with, I don't know if you've been following it, Joe. He's been, people have been making, changes to the kernel, and he's always got comments about it. And if it's a friendly way of doing it, I think you'll get more people. But the problem is that some of the basic applications that are necessary to make it a success are not there for the regular people. Now, if you want, you could say yes. Like a program like Audacity can run on all platforms, okay? There's GIMP that's available for, photo editing and so on. But something as basic as income tax returns, it doesn't exist in Linux. There is a version of it, but it's like in beta form. And that's one reason for it. So hopefully that answers your question.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Okay. We're taking phone calls at 888-874-4888. And we were talking about, the job market itself. Now, one of the things that related to the job market is H-1B, okay? And I know that I have very strong feelings on it about H-1B is that, the industry is asking for 200,000 new approvals this year. And Congress, I think, is debating whether they should raise it from 65,000 to 200,000. But the problem is that it's big companies that are asking for it. But what the big companies do is once they get it, they transfer it to a third party. The third party, or at least the third parties are getting it, and what's happening is that they treat the people as consultants. They're not paid at the same rate as the person with a regular job, equivalent job, okay? And what happens is that they're paid like 25% less, and it's a real problem. Like the famous case is what happened a few months ago with Disney. 190 people got laid off. And, oh, by the way, not only are we laying you off, but you have to train the people that are replacing you. And that's not what H-1B was meant for.
No, it's not. But also, it's a more complicated situation than that. The people at Disney were given a fairly good termination package, except
it was conditional.
It was conditional on their never talking publicly about the fact that they had to train their replacements who were H-1B people. The H-1B concept was an excellent one on the part of the government. As usual, things get planned by the government, get written by a lobbyist, and get violated by the citizens. I'm kind of bitter on it, not on the H-1B, but on the entire concept. Hank and I have different philosophies, but one thing we do agree on, that if you're going to find a way around it, then, write a better law.
What the H-1B, okay, is meant to be, if you cannot find someone to fill a skill requirement, then by all means hire someone from overseas. Now, that was the original genesis of it, and then it changed where, if you want to hire someone that is not necessarily a tech job, because I know the Board of Education hired a number of secretaries that way, okay, you could do that. Then Congress changed the law saying, hey, you know what? You have to pay the same going rate as employees with the same job in the United States, except that there's a loophole in there. This only applies to jobs up to $60,000 a year. Now, many of the tech jobs are more than $60,000.
Well, the problem there switched rather dramatically. Two things happened. One, because of the economy, because of the market, a lot of students in college stopped studying technology. That was one problem. The second problem was the technology at the commercial level, the enterprise level, changed dramatically over a period of time, and very soon corporations found that paying whatever the market would bear would not get them employees who knew what they were doing. So they started looking overseas. It's very expensive to recruit an overseas person, bring them into this country, set them up, get them a green card. It can't be done.
But in the case of Disney, where they had 192 people who were already trained to do the job, and asking them to train new people to replace them?
Again, I get back to what I was starting to say. So the government set up this H-1B program for technologists, and it was working beautifully. It was doing just what it was supposed to be doing. We were getting people from the IIT, the Indian Institute of Technology, top people in the world, to come in and do the jobs. And then they discovered, they being large corporations, that they didn't really have to pay a full salary. They didn't have to pay for paid vacation time. They didn't have to pay for paid medical benefits. This is a big part of the salary costs. And third-party companies brought in H-1Bs on their books, on their payroll, and then they sent them out as hourly employees.
Consultants.
As hourly employees, with the name Consultant Hank.
Mm-hmm.
As hourly employees, because they were in demand, because they knew how to do the job, and the Americans didn't. Why didn't the Americans know how to do the job? Because they could make more money working for a hedge fund, because they wanted to be whatever.
But wait, the people at Disney,
no,
they were more than happy to have the job.
Let me finish. When that happened, the whole concept of the consultants, then lawyers looked at the law, and like most laws that came out of Congress, it was badly written. That's another show entirely when I talk about who writes laws. But the laws were badly written, and there were loopholes. And one of the loopholes companies like Disney took hold of. Incidentally, I looked at the law very carefully, and I looked at what Disney did very carefully. I'm not a lawyer, but I couldn't figure out the loophole there. I don't know how they got away with it. But what they did is what Hank suggested. They brought people in to do the jobs at a lower salary, not so much that it was a lower salary, but they were hourly employees, and they didn't get paid vacations, and they didn't get medical benefits, and they didn't get paid holidays. So right away, even if they were dollar for dollar the same, they were saving a fortune on the fringe benefits.
You know, there was a dirty little secret with that. I'll tell you what it is, okay? When you are an H-1B employee, you have a gig, this working gig, for 3 years, okay? At the end of 3 years, they expect to be paid more. And guess what these third party did? They brought in new people.
Well, it's not only that.
Wait, let me finish, okay?
No, you're wrong.
No, wait.
Most H-1Bs don't expect to be paid more in that sense. They do as they go along on a gig. At the end of each year, they do get an increase. They do get a raise. That's not really
the point. No. But what happened is that at the end of 3 years, if they're not rehired by the consultant firm, they're supposed to go home, and they don't go home. And that contributes to it. By the way, we have a caller, and let's take that call.
Tom in Merrick is on the phone, and
Is this Tom, my friend, that I used to hear formerly?
No, this is a completely different person. No,
different
I'm kidding. Listen, welcome to the age of cyberspace. What can I say? So that's awesome that you guys are on the air still. That's fantastic.
After all these years.
And, well, not only that, it's good to hear Joe, not through a phone, but through, it sounds like, high fidelity. So it's always good to hear him.
No. You got to understand, this is a phone, but it looks like a microphone.
Yeah, so it's much clearer. It's definitely clearer. So it's good to hear from both of you. You miss Stevie, though, because he was a perfect foil for the two of you. But
We do miss him, but on the other hand, you're able to hear me through a microphone because I'm in an ADA-compliant professional studio with a professional engineer and a professional microphone. Unfortunately,
that.
I have Hank next to me, but what the hell.
It's good to hear, and it's good to see that you're in the air. Two quick questions. Are they archiving these? They used to archive the old air checks?
Yes. The answer is yes. As I understand, all you have to do is go to prn.fm, and you can then scroll to the program schedule, and if you work down to it, you will get the archival. You can download the program. They are working on putting a search in, so you could just say, the personal computer show, and you get to it right away. But they're working on it, and I understand that it will be done.
And in the meantime, as Hank said, just go to the schedule and scroll down.
It's also our plan that we will take that same information and put it onto our own site, pcradioshow.org, and Michael Horowitz, who is our webmaster, is working on that.
Now, since you're not going to or not easily take calls on the over-the-air portion, is it going to be kind of like a comparable content to what you would do, you know, here in the internet?
Well, let me put it this way: right now, until things are constantly changing, okay?
Yep.
We have two venues. This one, we have the ability to take phone calls. In fact, we're inviting people to call right at the top of the show to join us as we talk.
And I'll interrupt Hank to say if they call 888-874-4888, they, like you, will be on the phone.
And the other one, with we have no phones there, so that tends to be more editorial, and there's probably more detailed analysis from a tech point of view. In other words, if someone wants to talk something at a much the more detailed level, like, say, what's the difference between one laptop compared to another laptop other than price? I mean, you know, I can get into that. Okay?
Yeah, that's good.
All right. Excellent.
So the whole
idea is to have different content eventually.
Yep, I understand. You're obviously feeling this out. And you can comment this or not, but I do know that the new jet black iPhone apparently scratches incredibly well, or as they mentioned, it micro-abrades very well. So you need to put a case on it, they say, which kind of defeats the purpose of having the jet black. And then the last thing is, Joe had mentioned something around the lines. He found something remarkable about the water resisting of the new 7.
Oh,
and
yes.
And then he said he wondered why, and then you went on to other things, but I just wonder what the amazing thing about the water resisting
The amazing thing is one of the ways in which they made it really very effectively water-resistant. They did away with the earphone jack.
Oh, that's actually funny. Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you for that call, Tom. And we have another call on the line. Let's get to that call. Whom are we speaking with?
Are you talking to me now?
Yes, Jeff, we're talking to you.
We got you on the broadcast.
Oh, okay, well great. I'm worried about this lack of a earphone jack and being forced to use Bluetooth because of the microwave radiation. I mean, you're going to spend a lot of hours potentially listening to this, and I just worry about it.
Well, this is a tricky thing to talk about because it gets into the area of non-scientific science, if that makes any sense. There have been a great many experiments done on the subject of the micro radiation from the smartphone. This does not have a headphone jack, and those of us who are really concerned about holding the smartphone up to our ear for extended periods of time have another choice, and that's they have expanded their Bluetooth systems so that you can use a wireless Bluetooth headphone set. They're happy to sell you one. I don't know what the current price is.
Let me jump in because maybe Joe's a little reticent to talk about it. He has a hearing aid, and the hearing aid is Bluetooth technology, and basically he needs that jack. So what you're saying is that someone who has a hearing aid, you're just saying, hey, don't bother getting the phone. That's what you're saying.
No. Hank is wrong. What they're saying is we now have a Bluetooth compatible phone, and all you have to do
is change your whole
spend $3,000 to $6,000 on new hearing aids so that you can use your $600 iPhone. I am sure, as I'm sitting here, I am sure that within the hour, 453 third parties will have a solution for me.
You know, one of the things that we do talk about is that it's called usability. I find that there are many products, with design, they have all the specs, or they have all the nice-looking features, but have they ever run it by people using it and understand the problems they have using it? In fact, I was talking to Joe about the smartphone. I have a smartphone, and while I hold it in my hand, and my index finger is touching the volume level constantly, and if I hold it too tight, I end up changing the volume level.
Well, Hank is so lucky because he only has to worry about that. I have a Samsung Note 4, and my index finger is on the on-off switch when I'm talking. And sometimes, you know, you get excited about when I talk to Hank, my fist is flexing all the time, and I keep cutting him off.
By the way, the caller was asking about that 3.5-millimeter jack. Are you dependent on it?
Well, at the present time, I am.
Well, what do you use it for, other than headphones?
Well, that's what I use it for.
It keeps the basic of the radiation that may or may not be leaking out of the iPhone further away from his brain.
Right.
Which is something that a lot of people are very concerned about. Just for your idle curiosity, Jeff, some time ago I had Lou Sessions, was it? From the Microwave Journal. He was a scientist as well as a reporter, and he says that the worry about micro radiation is far overstated. On the other hand, there's a lot of anomalies out there that don't have an explanation, and I don't think we have all the answers yet. So I will not say to you, you're a fool for protecting yourself, because you might be the only smart one on the phone right now.
Wait a minute. I think Jeff is not going to upgrade his phone.
That's right.
Well, there's one other thing. I don't know what kind of a phone you have now, but the word is that in a very short time, the iPhone 6 is going to be steeply discounted for those that are still out in the marketplace.
Jeff, are you using an Android phone or a iPhone?
iPhone.
Okay.
Which model do you have?
5.
Well, you might want to upgrade to a 6. Wait until, this settles down a little bit.
Now, wait a minute. I think that the most compelling reason for Jeff to upgrade is the gold color, right?
Which gold? They have two different golds.
By the way, I don't know what rose gold looked like.
It's got a slight pink tinge.
Is that what rose gold is?
Yes, it's very lovely. I used to know a girl named Rose Gold, and she was just absolutely wonderful to go out with.
Jeff, thank you for that call. I hope we answered your question.
Well, you were very helpful. Thank you very much.
Okay. We're taking phone calls at 888-874-4888. And we have, the Personal Computer Show supports the user groups in the local area by making announcements for them. So we're happy to make the following announcements. The New York Amateur Computer Club will be having a meeting, a general meeting, open to the public tomorrow, Thursday, and that's at 7 p.m. The topic of presentation is My Robot Did It. And it's going to be at NYU, 32 Waverly Place in the Silver Building, room 414. A photo ID is required to get into the school. The Long Island Mac User Group will be meeting on Friday, this week, September the 9th, at 7 p.m. at the Old Westbury campus of New York Institute of Technology, otherwise known as New York Tech, the Anna Rubin Hall, or the 300 Building. And the Rockland PC User Group will be meeting Tuesday, September the 13th, 7:15 p.m., and they'll be meeting at the Rest Room on the fourth floor of the Palisades Moor in West Nyack. And finally, this announcement I'm pleased to make, Joe, because you know who's making the presentation. At the Brookdale Computer User Group, the topic of presentation is Stay Home, Stay Safe. Alfred Poor, Dr. Alfred Poor, will be making the presentation. And Alfred has been on with us on the air, and he now comes in when he has the time. How Technology Helps Seniors Remain in Their Own Homes, Friday, September the 16th, that's next Friday, 7 p.m., Building MAS, Room 100, at the Brookdale Community College in Lincroft, New Jersey. And these announcements and others, you can go to our website, pcradioshow.org, and on the left-hand side is announcements.
I would suggest that you go to our website, pcradioshow.org, to keep tuned to what our different announcements will be. Things are happening fast here on the Personal Computer Show, and if you want to stay current, that's a good place to go. Hank, we still have...
Yes, I do want to go cover a subject because I've had people call me about what machine to buy, okay? And very often I would say, well, what do you want to use it for? And our motto is always form follows function. In other words, what are you going to use it for? And then you go find the solution to fit that requirement. And some of the people say they want a large screen. And I said, well, what do you mean by a large screen? Well, they want something like 21 or even 23 inches because there's a sight problem or they just feel more comfortable with a larger screen. And they want to know what laptop is available. And I smile at them. I says, yes, you can get laptops as big as with a screen 27 inches, but I wouldn't call it a laptop. I would call it a very heavy suitcase, all right? And by the way, Lenovo has a large screen unit that is, what, I think 27 or 29 inches. Very expensive. I wouldn't recommend it. So in a case like that, what I normally would recommend is consider a desktop. Now, a desktop, the one reason why people have, 70% of people install laptops is because of the real estate it takes on the desk. But what's been happening is you have these small, what is called bare-bone systems, very small. It's actually, it looks like, smaller than the size of a cigar box. And it's all put together for you. You only have to put three things in, a CPU, memory, and a storage unit. And these are called bare-bone units. I happen to recommend them for two reasons. One is you could upgrade these easily. A lot of people say, my laptop is running too slow. How do I speed it up? Well, you could change the storage unit to a solid state unit. That'll enable you to run faster. You can increase the memory if the slots are available, because if you happen to be running with a 64-bit operating system, it can take advantage of more memory. If it's a 32-bit operating system, guess what? Going more than 4 gigs is not going to help at all, okay? And then the third factor people talk about, well, can I change the CPU? The answer is no. But you can on a desktop and with most of them. But then on the notebook, they would say, well, okay, I'm going to buy a notebook, but what's the difference between this notebook and that notebook? They seem to have the same features, but one costs two, three times more. It says you're paying for the CPU. So how do I measure the CPU?
How do you measure the CPU, Hank? I mean, I got to tell you that I have, four different CPUs at home?
And you don't know which one is faster than the other?
Not at all. I go on the practical level. There are some machines I will not use on certain jobs, and there's other machines that I will.
Well, there is a website I highly recommend. Okay, it's called Passmark, PASSMARK.com. And they give you the necessary information that you need to know. Like, for instance, what is the total power of the processing itself? And they have like 6,000-7,000 CPUs listed on it. And then they have it, in, you know, for AMD processors, the Intel processors going way back.
The thing that Hank hasn't pointed out is obviously you have to know what you're looking up. What is the CPU in the machine
model,
you want to buy?
Or you need a model number, okay? Now, people don't realize that an i3 processor, most people say, okay, I have an i3, i5's got to be faster, the i7's got to be... Wrong. An i3... high-end is faster than a low-end i5 at lower cost.
So if you know the model number of the machine you're thinking of buying...
Look it up.
Where
now,
do you look it up?
Go to Passmark.com. Now, the other thing people don't realize is that they still sell equipment with Pentiums and Celeron. There's nothing wrong with them. Now, in future shows, I'll go to in much greater detail. Why do they have Pentiums? They have Celerons. They have i3s, i5s, i7. Well, this is something that I spoke to Andy Grove about, and it was a valuable lesson for Intel, and it's worked for them. Back in 1992, I remember when the first Pentium came out, the yield on it was like 27%. And the reason why it was 27% was because it did not meet specs. And we said, what did not meet specs? Well, what happened was that, guess what? They just threw out these units. Why just give it a different name at a lower speed? So that's what was happened. So what happened is that you have all these, but it really comes down to just what is the actual processing power. The other is the TDP, what is the heat distribution on it, and the other is what's a one-way or two-way. By the way, if it's the same processing power, you get it with the least way because that means a single task runs faster. We're going to have to run off. We have to get off soon, okay? So you want to? You have a final comment to make?
I do have a final comment to make, and it's a very personal one. I bought a Samsung smartphone. It was the Note 4. It was highly rated. The problem is that it's one of the best laptop or pocket computers I've ever used. It is absolutely amazing in the amount of pixels I get when I take a photograph. I can do burst shots. I can do videos. You know what I have trouble doing? Using it as a telephone. My personal advice is always going to be, if you're going to buy a smartphone, use it before you leave the store. Call somebody. If you have trouble hearing them, if your voice sounds scratchy, I call Hank, and he says I sound fine. To me, he sounds like he's at the bottom of a sewer.
Well, we're going to have to sign on soon, but let me just say that if you have friends who are not familiar, that the Personal Computer Show is available on PRN.FM, the Progressive Radio Network. Tell them about it. We're on at 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and we do have a call-in number, and we plan on inviting people to join us with their phone calls at 888-874-4888, and you go to prn.fm for more information, and we welcome you to ask friends to join us and tell them, hey, we can be found at a new site, and we'd be happy to join them. And let me just say that, we have a website, PCRadioShow.org, and we happen to have a Twitter account too, right?
Yes, it's at PCRadio212. PCRadio212. That's number two, number one, number two. For those of you who know how to use Twitter, if you want to send a private note, make sure you use the proper coding. If it's a public note, just send it there to at PCRadio212.
In the meantime, stay in touch and keep on computing and back up, back up, back up, And on behalf of Joe King, Mike Horowitz, and myself, Hank Key, we thank you for listening. And until we meet again, same station, same time, next week. Happy computing and good night.